On today's College Football Inquirer, USC heads to South Bend. Is it a playoff elimination game for one team or for both teams? Also, the Holy War, BYU and Utah. Some crazy action in the SEC. Ole Miss heads to Athens. LSU heads to Vanderbilt as an underdog. We'll talk about it all on today's College Football Inquirer. This is the College Football Inquirer. I am Andy Staples here with Ross Dellinger and Stephen Godfrey. Stephen Godfrey back in his home studio, back in his sport coat. Ross,
by demand,
back, recovered, not all the way recovered.
Well, but mostly recovered, Andy. Yeah, mostly recovered.
You were probable on the injury report that I got last night.
Yeah.
That's all I know.
Yeah. Look, I'm here. Yeah, we made it. Nobody has to find anybody. We didn't like a USC did, right? We didn't, I don't know what you'd call it now, get fined for an erroneous.
They listed him as out and he played, right?
Yeah, he played. Yeah, the running back played. So I'm here. I'm ready to go. And I'm probably at 90%, Andy, so don't be sending me in on third and goal at the, you know, at the one to bulldoze into the end zone, okay?
Well, we might have to. I mean, I'm glad you said it this way because that game in South Bend actually may come down to that, especially now that USC has decided that it is a ground and pound team. So let's talk about that because that's a fascinating game, not just because of the circumstances around this year's matchup, but because we don't exactly know the future of the USC-Notre Dame rivalry. USC seems to be a little persnickety about when and where it gets played. Notre Dame would like to keep playing it. Notre Dame, painting USC as scared. Not scared, but scared. And this is going to be a subplot as this game plays out. But the circumstances of it this year on the field are fascinating because Notre Dame, two nip-and-tuck losses to Miami and Texas A&M, but those are the two best teams on their schedule, probably, unless USC is one of the best teams on their schedule. And they have to win this game. If they lose this game, Notre Dame's out of the playoff. No question about it. What about USC, though, guys? If USC loses this game, where do they stand?
Well, you know, I think at 10-2, right, you would think that they would be able to still potentially get into the playoff. I mean, if they go 10-2, you know, they'd obviously win out, and that would be a win at Oregon and at Nebraska. So that would be pretty good, probably good enough to get the last spot or two maybe into the playoff. But, yeah, for Notre Dame, it's sort of do or die. And, you know, I was at the Miami-Notre Dame game in the A&M-Notre Dame game, so they're probably not inviting me back to South Bend for a game.
I was wondering why you weren't going there this week.
So those aren't just the two best teams potentially on their schedule, right, Andy?
No.
Those are two top five teams right now, and maybe, I don't know, maybe the two best teams in the country. Maybe the A&M wins the SEC and Miami wins the ACC, and you never know. I mean, they've looked pretty good. So it sets up for, we talked about it, you know, what, 3 weeks ago. It kind of sets up for Notre Dame to go 10-2 and squeak into this thing, which I'm sure would make everybody really happy around the country.
I think this People is close to a playoff Notre elimination game. I know that we talked very briefly before we went on the air, guys, that, you know, USC still has a path at 10-2. But I don't know about this remaining schedule. We're talking about at Nebraska, all right? We're talking about at Oregon. Those are not just easily winnable games. And then also the bottom of their schedule, the sort of weaker winnable games, are all against teams that are sort of on the upswing in conference. So Northwestern, Iowa, they get both of those at home. That's fine, but sort of upset alert games. And then, by the way, they close the year against a reanimated zombie of UCLA in that offense, which is not nothing because that interim staff might be coaching for their future lives. There's a road left.
I wrote a column about Tim Skipper, the UCLA interim coach, this week, and I said if he wins two more games on this schedule, because UCLA's remaining schedule is nasty. Like, they play Maryland this week. That's the easiest game they have left. I said if he wins two more games, you got to give him the job at the end of the USC game. Like, it is.
If they were to beat this USC team, that's automatic, right?
Yeah, right? Probably.
The way we've all fallen in love with Neuheisel and sort of forgotten he's not the interim head coach, but the amount of points they're scoring. Yeah, definitely.
It's like when Dabo beat South Carolina in 2008, and they're like, here you go.
Yeah. We're not going to go to market right now, nor should they, by the way. If you're winning this many games and to avoid going to market as UCLA and having your flaws as a system exposed, system being the entire overall football product, yeah, I would hand that. I would pull that interim tag off. I know you did that with the guy you just fired, but this is a different situation entirely.
Yeah, that's the only thing, right? It's like, well, first of all, you're right, Godfrey, that you'd want to try to not get into this coaching market when there's probably going to be 3 or 4, maybe 5 plus more jobs that are better than yours that are sort of open. But the fear, I'm sure, is the fan sort of reaction to, you know, doing what you just did. I don't know. I wonder where that lies. They've certainly been, like all everybody who has an open job, you know, they've been making the calls and maybe even talking to candidates here and there. So they're kind of down the road on the coaching search. We'll see if they maybe pull it back if he keeps winning.
Well, speaking of open jobs, I mean, the big job that is open is Penn State. And we had a story on Three this week by Pete Nakos that said, you know, they're probably going to try to call Marcus Freeman getting back to Notre Dame USC. And I would tell you, we assume Florida's going to open. Like, you're not doing your job at Florida if you're not calling Marcus Freeman and asking at least if he's interested. I think a lot of interest is going to head his way. I don't think he's leaving. I don't think he's going anywhere. But it does get more interesting if he's not in the playoff or in the playoff hunt the rest of the season. So I think Notre Dame can probably just give him a little more money and be fine. But that is another thing to consider in this game. I'm with you, Godfrey, on the USC part, where it is not actually a playoff elimination game for them. They can win out if they lose this game. The thing is, if they do lose this game, and there's a certain way that you lose this game that would be particularly discouraging, you're not sure they can win out because the schedule is harder.
Yeah. It is.
So this is my... 2 weeks ago, I would have said, I have no doubt about this game. Notre Dame's going to roll over them. It's going to, you know, Notre Dame's going to manhandle them up front. But the USC-Michigan game just put me in a blender because USC was awesome on the ground. USC averaged 6 yards a carry. King Miller, Dr. Dre's nephew?
Love it.
Awesome. Absolutely great.
That doesn't make us feel too old, so that's nice. Yeah. Nephew, yeah. There's some wiggle room.
Wink Martindale could not figure out what to do with them. They had the screen game going. And obviously, Jaden Maiava has been great all season. Mekhi Lemon's been awesome all season. So you know they're going to be able to throw the ball. If they can run the ball on Notre Dame, and by the way, like Texas A&M was able to go for 4 yards a carry against Notre Dame. I'm not saying 5 or 6 yards a carry against Notre Dame. That's probably asking a lot. But A&M was able to run the ball effectively, which opened things up in the pass game and turned that game into a shootout. I do think USC, the version we saw against Michigan, where their defensive front was very good against Michigan's run game, I think USC can turn this into a shootout.
Well, they could, and I was shocked by the Michigan result and how that went down as well. But I wanted to go back for a minute. We talked about Marcus Freeman. Remember that he's going to get a ton of interest, obviously. But remember that the first coach ever to voluntarily leave Notre Dame happened, 3 or 4 years ago with Brian Kelly. So it'd be interesting if back-to-back coaches decide to leave.
It's been working out great for Brian Kelly. It's worked out so good for Brian Kelly. Really endeared himself in Baton Rouge. No problems there whatsoever. Definitely on the track for a national title.
That's going to be an interesting one. I'm sure we'll get to later. Parker Fleming, your guy, Godfrey had released his like projections, and that one I think was 65% or 70% Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I'll
edge
be there
in the game. So that
I'll be there.
We'll be talking
anyway,
about that.
Leaving that Notre Dame. I don't want to call it understandable. I actually don't want to come down on one side or the other. This is not the Notre Dame that Brian Kelly left. For Marcus Freeman, real fast. We don't have to talk about Penn State in this segment. We don't have to talk about open jobs in every segment. There's still a lot of football to be played. I wouldn't leave anywhere if I was, I wouldn't go anywhere in college if I was Marcus Freeman. This is a fully realized Notre Dame product, Andy, that we've kind of inserted some quips and comments about when we were talking about the Irish. they're just so much better. They're more athletic. I know they haven't won the national title. I know that's the standard at Notre Dame. His recruiting has realized the modern concept for the Irish mm-hmm. to be successful. And because I don't even think that's fully realized yet, this might be a game too where you talk about running backs. The situation at USC's running back, I mean, the injuries there, combined with what Notre Dame can do when they're running the ball, this could be a sort of display game for Notre Dame in a prestige mm-hmm. moment, in a rivalry game that may not exist, whatever. We can talk about the drama of all that. This could be a centerpiece, a showcase game where if I'm him, just look, if you're a college football head coach, and to go 0-2 and receive the benefit of the doubt, the way that Notre Dame does as a brand, is there inherent bias there? Sure, whatever. But there's inherent bias there, right? You have a focal point that no one else enjoys. And now, unlike Kelly, where you were in this sort of almost decade-long prolonged divorce, and you know there was so much internal anxiety and angst over the direction of the program, and could he create something that could beat an SEC team? Marcus Freeman can do that, right? Mm-hmm. They were close. Yeah. Ohio State
beat Georgia straight up in the Sugar Bowl.
He beat Georgia straight up.
And I don't want to hear about injured quarterbacks. I'm sorry. Like, you had time to prep for that game. We've seen backup quarterbacks.
They whipped him on the line of scrimmage.
Dude.
I mean, it was just a dominant performance.
Exactly. Yeah. It really had nothing to do with quarterback when you were living 2 yards deep. I would not leave this Notre Dame. This Notre Dame team might come back from 0-2 to go to the playoff, Andy, to your point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. If I were Marcus Freeman, this is what I would do, because there's one little thing about Notre Dame that, compared to the other teams that want to win the national title, you've got to deal with it that they don't. And it's academics? You can't take all the transfers you want.
Yeah.
It's a little bit harder. You need either someone coming from a Stanford or a Duke or a Virginia.
They've loosened that a bit, though, haven't they?
A little bit. But or you need a grad transfer. Yeah. But you can't take out, you can't just take anybody. And I think if I were Marcus Freeman, along with a little extra cash, as everybody's calling this offseason, I'd be like, can we loosen that just a tad more?
Sure.
Because the roster's right there. Like, this roster is as good as anybody in the country except maybe Ohio State. And Ohio State's is probably just a cut above everybody else's. And I think this will be, I'm interested to see this, because it's an interesting test of Notre Dame's roster and of USC's roster, because we know that USC, they've told us the cavalry's coming. They hired Chad Bowden as their GM. Their 2026 class is potentially the best in the country. They were not recruiting in a way that allows them to compete at the top of the Big Ten or for the national title. And I know fans are like, wait, why weren't they? Well, Lincoln Riley's never recruited that way. He didn't recruit that way at Oklahoma either. He was sort of forced into this. And now you're going to see the results of it. But the question is, can this USC team hold up against a roster that is built on the line of scrimmage like a national title contender? And that's the biggest question, because Michigan isn't there right now. Michigan is sort of that second echelon of the Big Ten. Notre Dame up front can absolutely bully you. So. Yeah. This USC defensive front that held up well against Michigan last week, that looked better than Oklahoma did against Michigan's run game, that looked, you know, better than the other teams Michigan's played. Can it hold up against this Notre Dame offensive line and the combo of Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price? I don't know. This is going to be a big test for them, because I think if they just get bulldozed, you get very frustrated if you're a USC fan, because it's like, okay, when does this part end?
Yeah, here we go again.
Well, they're not there yet.
Although we saw them against Michigan, that, you know, surprised some folks probably. So they kind of proved that they could do it against a really physical team. But can they do it to
you saw Michigan against Nebraska, where they were popping these huge explosive runs. They didn't do anything like that against USC. So it may be that Dan Lynn, the USC defensive coordinator, that he's got them better, and they have made improvements to the roster, but they're just not there on the offensive and defensive lines yet. And it's gonna take a minute. That doesn't happen overnight, but I do think they can get there the way they're recruiting this past cycle, and they'll hit the portal in the same way. But they do have a great quarterback, like Jaden Maiava. We haven't talked about him much because we weren't sure exactly what USC was. Jaden Maiava, by a lot of the advanced metrics, has been the best quarterback in the country this season.
Yeah, he's really looked impressive, and obviously he has some weapons out there. Lemon and there's a couple more, right? Lemon's the one that sticks out. He seems to always be open every time down the field.
Yeah, and Jacoby Lane's their other big receiver. Jacoby and then Lake Lane. McCree, yeah. The tight end, yeah. has been a very popular target as
right.
well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's thrown 13 TDs, two picks, and is completing 72% of his passes. I think he's probably got one of the better quarterback ratings in the country right now, like 185, according to the stats. It's been pretty impressive. But I think they've never had an issue at quarterback, I feel like, right? Especially with Lincoln and all that. I mean, they haven't had that many issues.
Well, they did last year because Miller Moss was not the guy they thought he was going to be. Right. And then Lemon did not Maiava didn't immediately.
Yeah.
Because he had four games as a starter. But you saw Maiava's freshman year at UNLV when he was playing in the go-go offense, that he had something special to him, that he could be pretty good. So I do think this is going to be a fascinating matchup, because you saw Marcel Reed just dice up the Notre Dame secondary. And look, Marcel Reed might wind up being one of the best quarterbacks in the country. He may be a Heisman contender by the end of the season. So this is going to be fun, I think. I don't think this is going to be Notre Dame just hands the ball to Jeremiah Love and this game ends, 35-14. I think this is going to be maybe 38-35 or what was the A&M score was in the 40s.
41-40 in overtime or something like that, whatever.
It's funny, Andy, because sometimes when we're previewing like the big game of the week, I can kind of tell where you're leaning in a prognostication sense, like the storylines you're building, but it's like you're going back and forth here and you're talking.
I don't
yourself.
Know. I had to pick the game on my On3 show and I picked Notre Dame to cover, but I don't feel particularly comfortable about it.
What's the spread?
Spread's kind of high. It's like Notre Dame by 7.5 or 8.
Yeah. I think to Ross's point, they like the line of scrimmage conversation to favor Notre Dame. Although, a couple things. DeAnton Lynn, I talked about it early in the season, felt like it was premature that he had that sort of Blake Baker timeline of coming in as being the hyped fix man.
We've made the scheme better. Now we need the better players. Like,
yes.
Blake Baker made the scheme better immediately, and now he's got the better players at LSU.
And so you don't get that actual product on the field until maybe sometime into year two as you actually fit the pieces for what you need. I wonder if, and I know it's meta to have this conversation because we are the media, if USC, for all its posture in college football, still like suffers from the West Coast syndrome a little bit, because this is a late loss to Illinois away from an undefeated team coming in this weekend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're treated as such. I still think
it's the way the Illinois loss happened for me.
Yeah.
Now the Michigan game has changed. As you can see, I'm very and forth on this one.
And there was, there was a bye in between those.
Yeah.
And
the Michigan game changed my outlook on USC. But after the Illinois game, I was completely convinced they're the same thing they were last year.
Yeah.
This is no different. Yeah. Because Illinois needed a field goal to win the game and just rammed it right down their throats and took what it wanted. And that's what happened to USC last year. But Michigan couldn't do that. And the fact that they didn't let Michigan do that gives me hope that maybe they are a little bit different. So
it's Michigan's the modifier here, and it's hard to understand what they are to understand what USC is. Because there's a lazy, although somewhat accurate narrative that USC is not built for the Big Ten yet in terms of line of scrimmage play. And to go back to the remainder of their schedule, if that is the reason they lose this weekend, that could be easily copied by some of the teams down the stretch. And then you're talking about that 4 or 5 loss team again that doesn't look fit for its new environment.
Right, because that is what Oregon can easily do to them. That is what Iowa can do to them. So it is an issue. But I want to let it play out. And the reason I took Notre Dame is if it does wind up being a shootout, the back door is open either direction for a cover. Yeah. Is it you could have one of those situations where a team's up 14, then it's up 7, up 14, up 7. Or you just have a Texas A&M Notre Dame where it's just back and forth, last team with the ball wins. So I'm pumped about this game. I'm glad that this game matters. I'm glad it matters from a national perspective, because this is historically a very important game in college football. I won't go into the whole Notre Dame speech with Fielding Yost blackballing the Fighting Irish and them having to go play, go east to play Army, go west to play USC. But it's important in college football history. And I'm glad this rivalry matters.
Yeah, let's hope this game, this rivalry continues. We obviously know the storyline of how USC is not really wanting to continue the game, or at least in its current form. I think that the last offer, I believe, from USC was to do a 2-year deal with Notre Dame. And so I think that's still under discussion. It sounds like Notre Dame very much wants to continue, I think, the series, but wants to continue it longer term than that. So should
guys,
be interesting.
Guys. It's important to college football's history. Therefore, surely college football will protect it, right?
Yeah, sure. Right.
That's what all those industry leaders who listen to this show, right? They think first and foremost about protecting college football, right?
I detect cynicism. Do you detect any cynicism there?
Of course not.
Maybe.
Andy? I think
I do. Of course not. We wouldn't just burn down a rivalry for the sake of TV deals.
No.
For the sake of five more pennies. Yeah. Speaking of pennies, our producer TJ tells me that the Notre Dame USC line is now Notre Dame minus 9.5. So
I mean that means some money has come in
on the Irish this week.
I got a feeling on that one. Wow, that's huge. That seems huge.
All joking aside, this is a line of scrimmage conversation. This might be some dumb money coming in too, because we cannot
Notre Dame
train
is a massive public team. Don't forget that's the part you have to consider.
Everybody
with Notre Dame is
bet. Owner against Notre Dame, I guess.
But massive public team. So don't assume this is sharp money.
I am also assuming that, like, sans Oregon, that college football as a national viewing audience has just never been trained to pay attention to the West Coast unless absolutely forced. And I think USC, to some degree, might be sort of under the radar. Yeah. And that Illinois loss, timed when it did, going into a bye, has people assuming that this is the same old product.
Yeah, I think they'll at least watch Jaden Maiava and Makai Lemon and be like, whoa!
I think you'll be surprised. If you have not watched USC this year, I think you'll be surprised. I think that's fair to say.
Well, I'm very excited about that game. Also very excited about some of these games in the SEC. Let us talk about them when we return, because Ross, you're headed to Athens. Godfrey, you've done some research on this Ole Miss-Georgia game, which...
I also had to watch Ole Miss last week, which I feel like I should get some sort of award for.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of intrigue here, but also want to remind you, if you'd like to see Ross's beautiful beanie and Stephen Godfrey's beautiful sports coat,
Grits Blitz t-shirt.
There you go. Grits Blitz.
Grits Blitz.
Grits Blitz.
To the Yahoo Sports Network. How do you find the Yahoo Sports Network? Well, you turn on your TV, look on the home screen on your smart TV, click the Yahoo Sports Network icon, and click the College Football Inquirer. Or if you are anywhere, night, day, no matter the location, phone, tablet, doesn't matter. YahooSports.tv. We're available for you 24/7, 365. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the College Football Inquirer. Let us head down to SEC country, because there's a trio of games that are very, very intriguing. You've got Ole Miss going to Georgia. You've got LSU headed to Vandy as an underdog. And you also have Tennessee headed down to Alabama, because it is the third Saturday in October and the Cigars will be ready for somebody, whoever wins that game. Gentlemen, let's start in Athens. Ross, you're going to this game. Godfrey, you saw Ole Miss barely beat Washington State last week in what is the Rebels' worst game of the season. They've been really good otherwise. I want to start with you, Godfrey. Why is Lane Kiffin so bad coming out of open dates? What does the bye week do to the man? Because
I will wreck the segment.
At their Georgia game last year when they looked like the national champion.
Yeah.
And then they take a week off and they go to Gainesville and lose. Like, I don't
know. It's morning games and it's games after byes. One might argue, and I'll do this very quickly, that the same personality quirk or foible that created such fun on-field tension with he and a particular Nicholas Saban is also the reason why he is wildly inconsistent relative to the Saban tree. That would be my incredibly short-term analysis on that.
But the thing is, this is not a morning kick, and they're not coming off an open date. And that's why I'm like, I don't... take anything from the Washington State game.
The if you did not watch Ole Miss Washington State, which, by the way, Washington State played their ass off. They came in completely prepared. And shout out, I could talk for a while on.
Yeah, they lost by 36 to North Texas. We don't.
Yes,
like that was embarrassing for Ole Miss.
They came in and absolutely like worked over Ole Miss on the lines, especially in a very sleepy morning game. This was the Ole Miss game against Kentucky last year that it didn't lose this time. That's
yes.
for the benefit of Ole Miss. It's basically that simple. Now they go into a situation where. I went to the nerds to copy off their paper, and they all told me positive things about the matchup dynamic between what Georgia's been trying to do and what Ole Miss excels at. So I went, obviously, to our friend Parker Fleming, Stats of War. Ole Miss is fifth in missed tackles forced on design runs, okay? So this is something that Georgia struggles with, all right? Ole Miss is a huge yards after catch team. They're eighth in the nation. Georgia's defense is 100th. All of the advanced analytics are talking, basically saying, when Chambliss is good, the quarterback, Trinidad Chambliss, when he is good and when he is accurate, because he was very, very much not accurate against Washington State to the point where I caught the stadium PA twice saying tip pass, and then you would go look at the replay. It was not a tip pass. He was just sort of throwing ducks. Ole Miss is designed to create big plays against a defense like Georgia's. So that works to their benefit. The second thing is I talked to our friend Dan Casey, right? We talk, Dan Casey, if you go on Coach Dan Casey.
Play a day,
I get
his emails.
Always get that email. Sign up if you're listening. If you're a coach, if you're not, you will learn more about the sport. Schematically, they are going to use the space that Georgia will allow. I'm kind of talking myself into Ole Miss here, okay?
It sounds like it.
Here's one interesting sort of like pivot point. We can get into Georgia. Throw out the Tennessee game. Georgia's second half defense is a boa constrictor, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Georgia has adjusted and that they can move the ball somewhat effectively, which is what they took them a second to figure that out against Auburn, but they did that. They want to lay on you, right? So Dan called it a boa constrictor. They want to basically suffocate you. Their second half defensive adjustments this year have been so effective enough that it creates incredibly boring. So every time I talk about Georgia, I always go back to...
So better jump all over them the way Tennessee did.
Correct. Every time I talk about Georgia, I go back to the pre-Kiffin, ironically, Nick Saban dynasty at Alabama, right? We're big, we're lumbering, we want to force the ball down the field with a run game. And then eventually we're just going to lay on top of you because we're stronger, we're heavier, we're literally bigger than you. That seems to be the philosophy of Kirby Smart, however many years, I can't remember how many years he's been in Athens. He hasn't really adjusted or found like an OC philosophically or a coordinator and assistant where he'll kind of let them flourish underneath and kind of let them have a signature style. He still wants to do that sort of first era Saban Alabama bully ball. And if they can, Andy, force turnovers early, if they can get a lead out defensively, they have adjusted to everyone with the exception of Heupel, who they went tit for tat down the stretch. Every other game this year for Georgia has basically been like, all right, I took what you've got in the first half. You're going to score 3. You're going to score 0. You might score 7, maybe. There's some junk time touchdowns, I think, in the Marshall game and the Austin Peay game where it was just out of hand and they had subs in. They are not letting teams score in the second half. So this is going to be determined, I think, about halfway through the second, you have a pretty good idea who's going to win this game.
So Godfrey and I share something. He went to Ole Miss. I went to Mississippi State. We have
we both got
forever,
out.
You know, been part of the little guy crew in the SEC where
the rest
our
of y'all,
teams,
as Ebba would say.
Yeah, the rest of y'all, where our teams never win this kind of game. Never on the road, top 10 team, your big brother in the SEC, like never.
Right.
And I went back under Lane Kiffin. And I might be wrong because I just did the math while Godfrey was talking. 0-7 on the road against top 10 teams, Lane Kiffin is.
Mm-hmm.
Three losses to Bama, 3 losses to LSU, 1 loss to Georgia 2 years ago, 52-17 in Athens. They did beat Tennessee on the road. Tennessee was number 11 in that game maybe 3 or 4 years ago where the mustard came out of the stands.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was, golf ball.
Both.
It was both.
So was both. They always lose this game. And it's historically, right, Ole Miss in Mississippi State. Like, it's historically. Mm-hmm. And so it's just hard for me to wrap my mind around the fact that this is the one they're going to get. But, you know, I don't know what you guys think. I mean, like last year's team was a playoff roster, right? And managed
this team to beat the hell out of Georgia last year.
Yes, they did. Yeah. They did.
They did it in a way, Andy, a very different team. And they did it with a pass rush that is gone. It's in the NFL right now.
Mm-hmm.
It stylistically would have to be a different way of beating the hell out of them. Look, I try to maintain as aggressive a criticism as possible of my alma mater, which has been an extremely flawed and often embarrassing product on a national stage. And I'm not talking about football. From a football standpoint, this is as good as I've ever seen them in terms of organization, having the right coach, having the most effective talent in the right places at the right time.
Yeah, I feel like they're outplaying their talent. Like last year, they had one of the most talented rosters in the country and underachieved.
Yes.
I think they've overachieved with the roster they have this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think defensively, especially. I've been really impressed with how they've adjusted because they don't have a Walter Nolan. They don't have as aggressive as a pass rush up front, and they haven't lacked for it.
I was much more worried about them. Like after the Kentucky game, where they made Kentucky's offense look functional, which means Kentucky's offense was awesome by their standard that day, and then Arkansas went up and down the field on them, and I thought, oh boy. But then starting with the Tulane game, Pete Golding's defense has been good. Like it's been solid.
Yeah.
Again, it's a Gunnar Stockton conversation. I don't know if this Ole Miss defense is the one that's built to really sort of like break him, but I can keep criticizing Georgia's offense, and I will, as being too much in the past, too reductive, all that. I can do that every week. Georgia still wins games. And the Auburn game was maybe the most the way Kirby wants to win a football game I've seen in a while.
Yeah.
So it's
just
hard
lean
to
cast on you.
Yes, it's hard to cast aspersions when it works. Yeah. Of course, we all know that was because of the secret.
Here's the thing:
SEC
if Georgia averages
Auburn,
if Georgia averages 2.5 yards a carry against Ole Miss the way they did against Auburn, they are losing by a lot.
Yes. Yeah.
So
well, that's a really.
But
good
I don't
point,
think that's going to happen.
There was zero adjustment on the offensive side for Auburn. We talked about the goal line and the play in the review or whatever that sort of broke them. Ole Miss will adjust. Oh, that is one thing Lane Kiffin is good for, and that's why he gets the money and the nonsense attention and the stupid SEC documentaries is because he is a savant in those moments. He likes to play chess, and he Ross is right. This is not the program that normally does this. This is the schematic mind that is not afraid of going punch for punch with a Saban tree guy on the opposite side of the field on defense. He will find a weakness.
And Georgia has plenty of weaknesses. I mean, Georgia probably has been outplayed in three games this year. They got whipped by Alabama in a way. Tennessee, you know,
this
the
is
Auburn
not
game.
2022 Georgia. And it's hard because they were so dominant for that stretch that people have a tough time wrapping their brains around. They are probably just one of the good teams in the SEC right now.
They have looked good against a truly quality. Okay, here's the best way to. They survived a Tennessee game in Knoxville by almost sort of playing like Tennessee. And some of the throws that Stockton made, you can't argue with. They did the thing, all right? Georgia fans are going to tell you they looked terrible against Alabama and sort of felt like Alabama was in control of that game. The most they've looked like what they probably want to be this year is that second half against Auburn.
Yeah, Alabama, by the way, we're having a different conversation about this team in general because they're undefeated.
I know, but I mean, if Tennessee doesn't miss a field goal, this is Georgia's in such a weird situation as a program, as a culture, because they are very, very good. They are fit to battle, and they are really good in a fist fight in conference play. And they are a playoff caliber program, full stop, right?
Yep.
But it is impossible, especially if you are a Georgia fan, to measure this team without thinking about the two national championships that you have won within, like, what, an election cycle and a half? Like, it's incredibly hard. You had your Alabama moment in a concentrated, quicker way, and now we're on to this thing where everybody loses two games a year, and every game is losable in the SEC, and that's hard to adjust from. So I think they're probably leaning too much in the extreme way of thinking that they're terrible, when in actuality, they're built great for this era. They're just not as good, guys, especially in the defensive front, as they have been. Most of those guys are on the Eagles roster right now.
Yeah, I mean, think exactly. about they. You know what they won in 21 and 22, right? Wasn't mm-hmm. that their
yep.
years?
And those were the
right,
years.
Basically right before the world the NIL era started really took off in the parity from the
before
top
we had to pay them
40 teams,
titled players. Know? Boy, gig, I tell you what, it could be right now. Could be better.
All right, let us go to two teams that have taken great advantage of the transfer portal. The game you will be at, Mr. Godfrey,
I'm so excited.
LSU at Vanderbilt. I think right. this is one of those cases where when the line came out,
yeah,
the average fan looked at it and said, Vanderbilt's a 2.5-point favorite. What in the world is going on yes. here? What does Vegas know that we don't? And yeah. I think the people that have been watching the games all year, like, that sounds about right.
I'm so excited. If you want to learn about Vanderbilt, I would start with number zero. Have you guys watched this guy? Junior Sherrill. All right. Junior Sherrill, number zero, Nashville product, elite tight end. This was the guy that, this is why I go to people who are smarter than me, because Dan Casey watches a lot of film, and that's, it comes from, he's an actual coach, comes from that background. Elite tight end play. Everybody's talking about how good they are on the lines, talking about Vanderbilt, and they are. This could be a, like, it's one thing, guys. I've lived in Nashville long enough to catch several, in person, Vanderbilt upsets. Probably the most famous and the most fun I had on a single day of sports writing was standing in the tunnel when the Gene Chizik Auburn team blew a game, right? It was the year he got fired after the national championship, and Auburn fans walking out and they were incredulous. This is not that Vanderbilt, guys. This potential upset, I guess technically not an upset, of LSU might be in its own way a signature form of humiliation, because I think Vanderbilt is built to bully. I think Vanderbilt could potentially, with the struggles that LSU's had at quarterback and on offense because he's not healthy, beat them up on both lines and lean and push and lean and push. And it would be a type of upset loss for LSU that they would not expect against this program.
And look, if they win, think about, people will start thinking about, ooh, Vanderbilt playoffs. Vanderbilt playoffs? Playoffs? Vanderbilt? I mean, it's a playoffs. Tough road after playoffs. This, but if they win, like, you know, you have they have Missouri, but that's at home, I believe, right? They're
right.
at Texas. They got Auburn and Kentucky at home, and then they're at Tennessee. I mean, it's not easy, but I mean, if they beat LSU, they're kind of get one more mulligan in that group. They could do that, and it would be pretty incredible story. And I mean, look, this LSU team, we've talked about it all year. It is. Godfrey, I know you have connections down there too. They are restless with the offense, to say the least. I mean, it is nasty to the level of like Les Miles late, Les Miles tenure offense stuff. Like poor Joe Sloan, you know, wouldn't be surprised if he's had his house egged already. But they are really restless with the offense. Nussmeier came out, I think, publicly for the first time maybe earlier this week and revealed how hurt he was earlier in the season.
Yep.
And he's obviously he's gotten better and a little
more
healthy.
You know why that's happening, though? To talk about how hurt he was and how great he feels? Because the last image we have of Garrett Nussmeier is limping after pretty much every play against South Carolina because he sprained his ankle.
Yes.
And, I mean, the guy's a warrior. Like, the thing is, like, I have no doubt about Garrett Nussmeier, the quarterback, or Garrett Nussmeier, the teammate. Like, he's awesome. But I'm worried about...
Yep.
Because at some point, with all the nagging injuries and the new stuff, does the dam break? Do you get to a point where it does seriously harm your production, or you're not capable of playing? Because that's what I'm worried about with him, because it felt like a couple times near the end of that South Carolina game, you're going, should they take him out?
Digging around the stats, trying to take the logos off the helmets, because I do think there's implicit bias sometimes when we talk about Vandy in this game. They're top 20 in rushing EPA defense and pass defense, which just basically kind of pulls out junk time and that kind of stuff. If you don't understand it, that's fine. The one that really jumped out at me, points per quality drive, which is just any drive where you spend any amount of time in the opponent's side of the field. LSU's 124th in the nation.
Oof.
This hasn't worked. Who was the guy, Ross, that met the fate of Brian Kelly in the press conference for not asking why?
Oh, Michael
bigger?
Cobble. Yeah, Michael Cobble.
Justice for Michael. Okay.
Yeah.
Justice for Michael.
Justice.
This is
it's been bad.
An offense that I, Andy, I, you know, I don't want to be too cynical, but Nussmeier has 100% been hurt, but LSU has now found it advantageous for him to go out and for them to go out and talk about how hurt he's been.
Yeah.
Because right. this offense has failed yep. systematically.
That's a problem. Yeah. The one thing I think that gives LSU a chance in this game is that defense is better than the one They're last good. Year. And that mm-hmm. defense last year held Vandy to 2 of 10 third down conversions, frustrated Diego Pavia quite a bit. So you have better players on that defense now running the same scheme. If they can frustrate Pavia, if they can like Alabama forced Pavia into two critical turnovers. Mm-hmm. You do that, you got a chance. But that's what we're talking about. And it's strange because we are talking about LSU like they are the underdog. They literally are the underdog, and there is a good reason that they're the underdog. And they gotta come out and play like it.
I still love to watch that Blake Baker defense, and it's gonna come down to how judicious they wanna be with I'm wearing a Grits Blitz t-shirt, which is basically cover zero is a way of life, folks. If they want to be as aggressive as Baker seems to want to be, I don't know how that's going to work out with Pavia.
And I don't know if that's a great idea. Tim Beck's not going to put it all on a key fourth down play where a receiver who's not necessarily great is up against Mansoor Delane one-on-one and there's no other option. Like, trust me, they'll find a better matchup than that or they'll have Pavia running the ball. So that's the thing. You gotta worry about all of it.
Bama kind of stayed back, Andy, to your point, and mixed a lot of man zone and dropped a lot of looks and made it just, which is all fancy talk for saying, a little just confusing enough for their front to get home and keep him boxed in. It was the best job anyone's done against Pavia in conference play that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Off the top of my head, certainly this year. I'm trying to remember all the games last year.
And LSU has the athletes to do that, to be effective any way they want to play. So,
but Baker Baker likes to get after your ass, so to speak. And so, if they do that, it's going to be risk reward.
Yeah, the problem is if you get after Pavia in the wrong way and he squirts out, you got a problem.
You got a problem, and then you're catching up, and they don't know how to catch up very well. It's crazy. I mean, think about
if Vandy has a 10-point lead, Ross, it's over.
Yeah. Year of our Lord 2025, and LSU's 113th in the country in rushing offense. Can't run the ball. 86th in scoring, 78th in total offense, and 60th in third down conversions. It's why they're sort of restless there. And Michael Cobble was right.
Yeah.
Justice for Michael.
let's head to Tuscaloosa, the last team to beat Vanderbilt, Alabama. They are playing Tennessee. Tennessee comes in with a very exciting offense. Joey Aguilar has really supercharged that offense. They are fun to watch. I'm excited for this game. So the thing I keep looking at, the first availability report came out Wednesday night.
Okay.
Jam Miller, Alabama's tailback, listed as questionable. He had a concussion at the end of the Missouri game. They are a different offense when he's in and when he's not in. And, I was very worried about them against Missouri when he went out. I would be very worried about them playing against Tennessee for an entire game without him. He's questionable. Kalen DeBoer said he thinks he might be able to play, but it's probably going to come down to we find out Saturday or Friday if he's going to play. I think that changes the complexion of this game.
Oh, completely.
If he's playing, I feel comfortable Alabama's going to win. If he's not, I'm not as comfortable.
I agree. Only, look, if this is the Alabama offense that we saw against Vanderbilt, I don't know if this is even a game because I think Tennessee, for all the conversation about the quarterback switch this year, that's been their sort of defining narrative characteristic. This defense has held on in a lot of games. They held on in the Mississippi State win. They held on. I mean, they gave up 44 to Georgia and let Georgia come back in that game. They have not been great in terms of just points allowed. Arkansas is the other one, sorry, that I was thinking of. This is going to be the best offense they've seen this year, by far. This is going to be the best quarterback they've seen this year, by far. I think it's less about Joey Aguilar in this game as it is about a Tennessee defense that probably just hasn't been fully exposed yet because they've hung on against some inferior talent, inferior opponents.
Always excited in a game with the out of nowhere sort of Heisman favorite all of a sudden, and Ty Simpson. So be interesting to see what he will do against Tennessee's defense. But like Andy was saying, the Jam Miller thing is pretty important as you look at kind of the fade here.
Yeah, I think the Ty Simpson thing, like Godfrey said, this is the best quarterback Tennessee's seen. This is the best collection of receivers Tennessee has seen. And that defense has not been great against anybody. So it's important for them to have that game. Now, look, I think Tennessee fans going into the season hope that Jermaine McCoy will be back by this point. He's out again. I don't even know if he's coming back. You know, he's going to be a potentially high round draft pick. He had a torn ACL in January. He just may not be coming back this year. So they are going to have to figure this out, and they're going to have to figure out how to create some turnovers, how to stop Ty Simpson on third down, which nobody's been able to stop. And if you do stop him on third down, can you stop him on fourth? Because I don't know that anybody's figured that out yet. So we're going to see. And I know there's somebody going, Florida State did. Florida State did.
I don't want to hear about week one right now. I don't want to hear about week one.
Yeah, they're not the same team anymore. So
sorry.
This is and so I know Alabama plays South Carolina next week, but I feel like this is the end of the giant slog. Alabama had this incredible four game, like, oh my God, how do you get through this of Georgia, Vanderbilt, at Missouri, Tennessee? Yeah. If they go 4-0 in that stretch,
yeah,
I feel really good about them the rest of the way. Even if they drop another game, I feel really good about them.
Lost
the rest
to Spin, boys. Lost to Spin. Yep. LSU, or which probably won't be LSU, you know, right now, I would say more Oklahoma. But those games are at home. They're both at home.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. We had to do our midseason, like, you know, picks for each league champion and the national champion. I picked Alabama to win the SEC and to win the national championship.
Feel good about that.
My midseason. Yeah. No, title winner.
If they win this, Ross, coming out, I mean, I don't know exactly how these probabilities are formulated for like percentage chance to win the SEC. They would have to be the highest if they win this weekend, like that backstretch.
Yeah, depending on what Ole Miss does, of course. But yeah, I mean, because they're undefeated. But
Ole Miss would have tougher remaining slate.
They would. Yeah, they probably would.
And Alabama definitely looks like a much more complete team by every stretch.
Yeah.
I like Alabama more every week. And this is another chance to improve that.
Did we determine what happened week one? How did this happen?
Well, Jam Miller didn't play.
Well, that's true.
College football doesn't have a preseason.
Also, you had no film on what Florida State was going to be with two new coordinators. Yeah, there's a lot of things you can say. But Alabama can overcome that. We're in an era where you get two mulligans if you play in a good conference, and they do.
I'm not trying to be too glib here, but don't give me this Florida State thing when the Noles are doing what they're doing, coming off three straight losses, trying to figure out how they can extend their credit line to potentially replace a coach again.
And then extend the credit line on something else.
Yeah. I don't know. Rework that jet ski lease or something, boys. And then Alabama is now the best team in the SEC by strange things happen in week one. We do this every year. I feel like we got to remind people. By the way, every year there's a marquee game in week one that we think is going to be dramatically impactful in the rest of the year. Guess what? Yeah. That was LSU Clemson. Not so much. Like, it happens.
Yeah, that's true.
We talk ourselves into this every freaking year. And it's because we have a 10-month offseason.
Absolutely. Hey, when we come back, guys, I've got a feeling. Ignore my feelings. But Godfrey and Ross's feelings have been very good lately. We'll be right back. Back at the College Football Inquirer, and it's time for I've Got a Feeling.
You think football is still fun?
I feel great, man.
I got a bad feeling about this.
My feeling was terrible last week. I led you astray, but I'm gonna do it. Since we talked about this game a bunch, I'm just gonna give the people mine, guys, and then you can actually talk about yours. I'm taking Vandy as a 2.5-point favorite against LSU. I think it's a sharp line. I think there's a reason, as we just talked about, why Vandy's favorite in this game. So I'm taking Vandy against LSU. Ross Dellinger, what is your I've Got a Feeling?
So We just talked about how dominant that Alabama has been, and I picked them to win the national title and in the midseason and the SEC championship and yada, yada. They've been great. And I got a feeling is that the spread in this game is too big and that Tennessee will cover. Not win, but cover. I think it's 8.5. TJ, I don't know if that's changed, but it was 8.5 when I saw it. And for a Tennessee-Alabama game, that just seems too big. So I think the Vols do enough to sort of hang around, and maybe there's even a late cover situation. But I don't expect Tennessee to win the game. But I mean, I could see it being
more than
those,
a touchdown,
like, 20,
is a lot.
Yeah, I mean, 8.5 seems like a lot.
Gentlemen, we turn our eyes to the center of college football, the Mountain West. Again,
perfect.
Where I keep getting healthy picking out these bad spreads in the Mountain West. Vegas should do a better job. Anybody want to talk about the Tokyo Toe? Anybody know what I'm talking about right now?
We know exactly what you're talking about. Yes, they're streaming Hawaii games in Japan now.
So I use my pick every week, not because I think it's great gambling advice. I use it because I want to talk about something interesting that's going on in the sport. Japanese audiences on live TV are now going to be able to watch University of Hawaii games because of the Tokyo Toe. I'm going to go with the pronunciation guide. My apologies in advance. I'm a redneck from Georgia. Kansei Matsusawa, the Tokyo Toe, a self-taught kicker. I think I got it. A lot of Kurosawa films over here. University of Hawaii kicker. He's in the race for the Groza. I believe he's perfect so far on 16 field goal attempts. Hawaii is extremely good right now relative to Hawaii standards. They are going to a Colorado State team where they are road dogs. I don't know why. I'm not exactly sure. I sniffed one of these out last week with Nevada, I believe, in San Diego State. I'm not sure why this is happening. I don't know if they're factoring in travel or what's going on here. Hawaii is doing a really good job. They recently announced there will be a new stadium. That was not a given for a while. If you don't know, Hawaii's been playing on like an intramural practice
like a high school
field
stadium,
that they sort of,
right?
They punt. No, it's on campus and they put temp seating around it. So last year, Deshaun Foster and UCLA opened there in week zero. I don't know if anybody watched that game. And it looked like it didn't look like a high school game, because if you're from the South, high school games look way better. It looked like exactly what I described. Like you put temp aluminum bleachers around like a practice field, and that's their stadium. If Timmy Chang and Hawaii are able to navigate just an absolute ridiculous amount of uncertainty as a program and get through this, it's going to be one of the more remarkable coaching jobs at the G5 I've ever seen.
Bowl eligibility on the line this week for Hawaii, by the way.
They're really good for Hawaii standards. This was a team that was completely left for dead. I was talking to their fans and some of their staff when they came and played Vanderbilt 2 or 3 years ago about what they were trying to kind of get through just to stay in the FBS and survive realignment. They're doing a great job. Check them out. I definitely think they're going to beat Colorado State.
Another game out west that we need to talk about is the Holy War.
Oh, yeah.
Utah at BYU. One of the two nastiest rivalries in America. The other one is the one between your two alma maters, the Egg Bowl. And I'm not talking about most competitive. I'm not talking about most impactful. I'm talking about in terms of pure hatred between the programs. Very little compares to Utah and BYU. The game last year was wild. Remember, BYU came in 8-0. Utah, I believe, was 4-4. It was a very tight game. It was a one-point game. The Utah fans will forever believe the refs just gave it to BYU. I guarantee you're going to get another fun one this one. Guys, I don't know about you. You look at the way these two teams are playing, and BYU's undefeated. Utah's got one loss, which is to Texas Tech. The winner of this game looks like the one that will probably wind up playing Texas Tech for the Big 12 title.
Yeah, it's hard to see anybody else in that league sort of making the run to the title game outside of one of these two teams that would play Tech and have a chance, right? Have a chance to go to the playoff.
Utah didn't really look like it had a chance in the second half.
It hung around there. You know, I was watching the BYU game last week. They won, I think, in double overtime at Arizona. And Bear Bachmeyer sort of led them back with some great plays. So you got Bear against Devin Dampier. And then you've got the best sort of rushing teams in the country as well. So this sets up to be a really fun game. Playoff on the line, sort of.
BYU has been given short shrift as an undefeated 6-0 team. I'll admit that, but also the schedule has benefited again them tremendously. It is very backloaded. You have Utah this week, Iowa State, Texas Tech, TCU, Cincinnati, UCF. Mm. That's basic. All your quality got dumped in the back. Okay.
Yeah.
However, they beat Utah here. We will start, like, I'm not saying we did it on purpose. I'm just saying it's one of those teams, like we talked about Missouri, kind of flies under the radar. If they win coming out of this one, I think they are in the driver's seat, even with that schedule, to play Texas Tech in the championship game.
The Utah Tech game, I was there, but it was like maybe late in the third or early in the fourth. It was a one-score game, so you never know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then he just ran away with
quarterback
it,
came in for Tech, and yeah, all of a sudden it was then, over.
Yeah, it was,
Will Hammond,
was crazy.
Will Hammond, by the way, maybe playing.
He played again.
Yeah, he may right be starting. Yeah. We don't know about Baron yeah Morton quite yet, but he yeah may be starting. Will Hammond, the backup, may be starting against Arizona State. They think Sam Leavitt is going to start for Arizona State this week, which they need him.
They also thought that there was a pocket knife thrown on the stand. So we haven't talked about pocket knife
video
gate
evidence.
Pocket
if
knife
there's a
gate,
prop bet,
man.
If there's a prop bet for fist fights on the field, I don't know if there is, always take this game. BYU,
yes,
Utah. Always take
100%. Ross was talking about the pocket knife situation in the Texas Tech Kansas game.
Texas Tech Kansas, yeah.
So Kansas upset with the number of tortillas being thrown on the field. We've talked at length mm-hmm on this show about mm-hmm tortillas being thrown on the field
yes
in Lubbock.
We have.
It was said by Lance Leipold that a pocket knife hit an assistant, I believe it was the claim. And it was thrown from the stands. And now video evidence that Texas Tech turned into the Big 12, this is the Lubbock Avalanche Journal reported this, showed that somebody dropped a pocket knife and a Kansas player picked it up and gave it to an assistant, basically, yeah, is what happened.
Ooh.
Did they intentionally drop it? That's the question.
I don't think
was it
was
closed?
It was,
it was closed.
Oh,
it
well,
was
then who
closed
cares? What's the difference?
But Lance like Leipold thought it was thrown with the tortillas mm-hmm onto the field, and the Big 12 ended up fining Kansas $25,000 for the lie, as well as public comments against the league office. He actually named some league office executives in his post-game press conference.
And then A&M got fined for throwing too many tortillas on the, or A&M, Texas Tech got fined for throwing too many tortillas on the field.
Well, Texas College Tech football coaches.
Yeah. I mean,
you gotta do your research, okay? This is just like Lincoln Riley talking about people coming to his house, and then and guess what? They FOIA'd all the police records. It never happened.
Jim McElwain in Florida, remember he said he got death
yes
threats. Like, and that's when I knew Jim
yes
McElwain was getting fired.
Yeah, that's right.
So
oh, my God.
Jim McElwain in 2017 yeah gets up the Monday of Georgia week at a press conference, says, my family's been getting death threats.
Mm.
And like, I wasn't in town that day. I wasn't at the press conference. I was actually in Orlando doing a story on Shaquem Griffin at UCF. And I remember I get done at UCF and I start to drive home and an email pops onto my phone from Florida's sports information department. And it's a very short statement that essentially says, we asked Coach McElwain to elaborate on the claim he made and he declined to provide further information.
He chose not to. Yeah. I
and I'm like,
that.
Oh crap, they're gonna fire him like
yeah
right
yeah
now.
Yeah.
And they fired him that Sunday. So
yeah. Florida's really had some interesting couple of coaches that have said public things that you just shouldn't say. Remember the Dan Mullen like recruiting stuff after the Florida mm-hmm game that just really
yeah
like,
yeah
I don't
poor,
I forgot exactly.
Poor Dave
what he said,
Waters,
but
the guy who asked that question, he was just trying to tee him up because Kirby had sort of sunned Dan Mullen in the press conference after the game saying, you know, You
yeah
can call all the pretty plays you want. We have better players.
Players,
and
yeah
so Dave Waters,
the Joes.
Dave Waters trying to set Dan Mullen up for an easy layup. Like, hey, we think about recruiting too. We recruit hard here. And instead, Dan Mullen, we'll talk about recruiting when it's time to recruit. And basically, he was already on the path to getting fired at that point, but that really sealed the deal. So
they should have opened the pocket knife and then presented it as such, or somebody
one,
should
one
have
more
just
game
taken
on the
a quick
cheat
stab
sheet, and then one more game on the cheat sheet. I want everybody to watch Washington,
yeah,
Michigan. If Washington goes to Ann Arbor and beats Michigan, things are going to get real loud.
Yeah,
around
Ann Arbor.
Sharon Moore.
Yes, they are. They're already loud enough, but you're right. They'll get real loud. Hey, speaking of Michigan,
yes,
Andy, real quick,
yes,
just shove it in at the end here. Because things are changing so rapidly around this thing, is the Big Ten's big PE deal, Michigan and USC. Their boards,
private equity,
at least,
not physical education.
Seem to have, and they don't call it PE, right? It's more like PC, private capital. But anyway, so
private capital, not political correctness.
This deal may get at least delayed, because Michigan and USC are pushing back against this deal, and it really needs to be. It needs unanimity to have this deal and the grant of rights extended with all 18 schools. So it's going to be really interesting. There's a meeting right now. You're probably listening to this. It's already happened, but the meeting is Thursday evening in the Big Ten, and it was supposed to be maybe a vote. It's not going to be a vote because of the USC.
Is it at the Fogo to Chow next to Big Ten headquarters? I just like to imagine that all their meetings were at that Fogo to Chow.
I don't think so. So, but keep an eye on this. I think it's just going to be delayed. And we'll see if they can, if USC and Michigan's boards will sort of come around on this. But right now, the way the deal is written, and the deal is written, 200-page document went out to schools over the weekend. I don't see them budging, but we'll see.
Michigan, too long, didn't read. We don't need it. Bye.
That's right. Yeah.
Too many lawyers at Michigan for that to happen.
Well, the lawyers at Michigan may have other things to worry about, because, you know, they may be trying to buy out a coach. Look, it's year two. But I'm telling you, the James Franklin thing has everybody just losing their minds right now. So watch the Washington-Michigan game. Things might get weird. Just saying.
Never pick against billable hours.
That's exactly right. That's the only undefeated thing in college football. But maybe we'll go undefeated on our I've Got a Feeling picks. I don't think we've ever gone 3-for-3 in a week yet since we started this show. So
whose fault is that?
It's mine. First time for everything, though. Maybe it's happening this week. We'll let you know on Sunday.